It's time for another episode of Card Subject to Change, part of the Four Frequencies Sake Podcast Network. This week, we're all going to believe in the energy as we welcome back friend of the podcast and current SCW Pro Heavyweight Champion, CEW Heavyweight Champion, and 3XW Pure Champion, JT Energy. Can our boys be the one to solve the unsolved mystery? Let's take you to the Honorable Nick Bull.
Hello, once again, welcome to another episode of the Card Subject to Change podcast. Jimmy, alongside for the match tonight, we have the Wizard CZ. Wizard, how are you?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing great. And I want to, before I introduce our guest, and we're glad to have a guest here tonight, Stripes is on assignment tonight. That intro, we've had Manders on, and our next guest is in that intro. What do you think the chances are we get the Usos and the Reigns or the Bloodline on this show? Regardless, that's a question I wanted to throw. I don't care about that right now because we have the SCW champion joining us, friend of the show, friend of the Card Subject Change podcast, JT Energy. How are you doing tonight?
Man, I'm doing great. Usually when I see an intro for a show, it's like someone will talk and they'll say a little blurb. But like the fact that we had a nice video intro there, and especially we use that really cute shot of me posing with the championship belt, like that's icing on the cake, baby. That night was really fun, and there's a really good picture out there of me posing like that with the championship, and I was really proud of that.
That's pretty awesome.
It's very fitting we have that picture in our opening, and I think CZ would understand. It's fitting we have you here. But when you said the magic word, you said fun, and I think CZ, you will agree that there was a lot of fun with our little assignment that we had this week with JT Energy.
There really was. It was a fun show to watch. We're going to talk about that in a little bit. We want to play catch up though with JT. It's been a few months since you've been on back in October. JT, you made a handful of promises back in October. The big one, obviously, is you were going to win the SCW title. And look, lo and behold, here we are, SCW Pro Champion, JT Energy in our midst. Talk about how it felt winning the big one, man.
Every time I think about, like, moments in my career, I always, like, they tend to encompass this unreal reality that I get to live through. And when I think back to the night that I won the SCW Pro Championship, that we got to be in Walcott, and it was the very last Walcott show. And that's the same building that I started my career in. So from day one, it was Walcott. And from the last day that I could have performed in Walcott, I was there in the championship match to open the show. And most of the time you think of your championship matches and you're the main event. But the problem with the main event is you're the last thing, which means you got to take every ounce of energy the fans have left into your match. Well, lucky for me, I got to start the show, which means I got every ounce of energy people are ready to let out. And when you had someone like me and someone like Connor Braxton open the show, you had people that wanted to lose their minds and cheer for me, and people that wanted to boo as hard as they could for someone like Connor Braxton, who had Rip Studwell and James Thomas by his side. And that night, biggest SCW Walcott crowd they've ever had, bigger than the Vader show, which previously held that title. We probably broke some fire codes that night, but the standing room only was ridiculous. I remember that. Yeah. That whole moment in that match, like, we went balls to the wall to open that show. And that, up to that point, my new gear that I'd been wearing, people asked why I had changed, and I put some straps on my gear, and I told them, I go, man, the first time these straps come down, you know what that means. Like, it's that Kurt Angle feeling. Sure. And I had never taken the straps down till that night. And that ending sequence where I hit a super kick, and then I hit a cutter, and then straps come down. I lose my mind, and I hit that final scissors kick and got the 1-2-3, and that place erupted. And it was the problem with that moment is I've been chasing that moment now. And it's like my WrestleMania moment. And every match since then, you know what you had. And I can see where people as performers find that drug. And they're like, man, I'm always chasing that big moment. And that was one of those moments that I can't ever relive. But every time I talk about it, just like a lot of things in pro wrestling, it'll give you the goosebumps or the feelings that you are. It's the reason that you do it. And that night was undeniably epic before we got to epic. So,
you know, you talk about that moment for you. Sure. I
love how you down. Oh.
I think we're having some issues here. I don't know if you guys can hear me.
Oh,
I can hear you. Nick, let me know if I need to PayPal you some money to put in the internet machine this week.
That moment.
Yeah, I think Nick's having some internet issues.
I used up all my silver coin last week, and I don't have internet this week.
So what I was saying, JT, I can have a similar experience. For me, when I was in the ring doing announcing, back in 2013, it was epic. That was my best night. I've been chasing that night forever. It's been 10 years now. The only word I have to describe it is magic.
Yeah.
And what do you do in those moments? You're in the ring, you've got the title in hand now, the match is over. What's going through your mind?
I had thought a lot about that moment and like what it would mean to me, because leading up to the match and things of that nature, like I had previously won this Central Empire Wrestling Heavyweight Championship, which was a big deal. That was the first singles championship, like main title that I had ever won. And I don't know if the night that I won that, I like was totally in the moment of like realizing what I had just done. But SCW is kind of like a different breed of animal, because that's like my home base. And when I won that there, I wanted to be like as real as I could. And I know that night, our match, I think it probably went a little longer than it should have. But once, I think Ryan, John G, he was our ref. And when he handed me the championship, he's like, just take your time, do whatever you need. And I like sat there, and it took me a second, but I realized like, okay, this is your moment. Just do what feels right. Do what feels like you. Don't worry about the JT energy side of you coming out right now. I go, think about Travis, think about growing up, thinking about becoming a wrestler, thinking about becoming a champion, and just stand here and look around and look at all these people that you did this in front of, and how sharing those emotions back and forth with the crowd that was reciprocating with me all night. So that moment, like you said, it was pure magic. And that's what you're always chasing. You want to get the fans to suspend their disbelief, but you also want to get so soaked into your own stories that you forget what you're doing, because that's when the real raw emotions play on your face. And that's the most important part of who you are, is what those people can see, so that way they can connect with you.
JT, hopefully my cryptocurrency is working. You can hear this question. I love how you broke that down, and you said a very key part there. This was also Travis getting to this point. Yes, it's 1, 2, 3, new champ. But talk about, you know, yeah, JT energy is the vehicle that got you to that. But really, Travis is what fueled that. I mean, how many people think like it's like, okay, my character got me here, I got here, but Travis is going to take me the rest of the way, or Nick's going to take me the rest of the way, or Chris is going to take me the rest of the way. How often does that come into your head, or is that just kind of something natural progression?
So I think when we decided to make the shift of JT Energy, for the time period, had kind of run his course as the most hated heel that SCW could produce. When he decided to flip that switch, and we needed to invest into me coming out more as JT Energy, the more that I sit and I let myself come out as my character, I think the more that JT Energy, like you said, is the vehicle, he's the one who's out there and he's wrestling and giving you a show. But me as a person, more of me is starting to come out and be the presence of JT Energy. And so, yes, we were trying to figure out the mystery of what JT Energy is, but that's kind of the fun part of it, is because a character is always evolving. You don't necessarily know what you're going to see, because it's always going to be something different with JT Energy. And the more that I progress and the more that the character progresses, the more that you're hopefully going to see me genuinely become more of who I am or who I envision myself as a professional wrestler, connecting with people. So nowadays when JT Energy comes out and he's got things on that just feel like him, and he can come out and he can just look right in people's faces and eyes, and he's not worried about saying, "Hey man, your shirt's dumb," or "Hey kid," you know, whatever. Now I can come out and the first thing I can do is I can look at all the people that are there and just appreciate them being there and high five people and hug people, or, you know, just point to that fan way up in the stands, like whatever it is. I want to make sure that when people come out now, they know that my main concern and my main goal is that they're seen and they're heard, because that's the biggest thing to me, is connecting with those people that come out. And I want to make sure that if someone can give me the time and effort, I will give it right back to them and reciprocate that energy back and forth to ultimately believe in the energy, because that's what I'm really trying to convey and get across now.
So on that note, you talk about Travis, you talk about JT, the character. It's been said that the best wrestling character is yourself turned up to 11. How much of Travis is in JT and vice versa?
I think there's a lot of me in JT Energy. I wasn't sure how. It's kind of like when I started wrestling, JT Energy was like my new car that I got, and I got to show it off to everybody. But like, it's also the same thing that a lot of other people can do. It's not really yours until you decide to, you know, I'm going to buy some seat covers. I'm going to put a stereo inside of it. I'm going to put my CDs inside the stereo. Like, the more that you kind of deck it out yourself, the more that over time it gets some wear and tear on it, but it's yours. You start to mold yourself to that thing. And now that I'm 7 years into this, I do feel like I've figured out, when I'm out there, even if I'm, let's say, lost and I have no clue what to do, there's a lot of me that comes out in that moment, because I try to think, what's entertaining right now? What did these people talk about? What do these people want? What have they not seen tonight? And I, as a person, all the wrestling that I've ever attained is up here in my brain. And in moments, everything that I've ever acquired that I like or I don't like is all in there. And it's my job to put it out there at the correct times to make sure that myself as a pro wrestler or a sports entertainer is doing my job, because all I care about is making sure that people, when they spend their money, they get their money's worth no matter what, every time. And I think that's realistically what I'm trying to convey with JT Energy nowadays. All it's been really from day one is, Did you spend your money? Did you leave happy? Was it because of me, even just a little bit?
Absolutely.
And for anybody out there listening or that hasn't been to a show, I can personally say JT Energy does take the time for the fans, does give them the time and the energy. And you'd be remiss if you don't catch them on a show, if you're in the Quad City area as we record this, or anywhere else where JT Energy can be found. I can vouch he does that, and it's a better product for it. SCW, I think, is a better place with JT Energy. It's also a better place with JT Energy, a champion. And I like how you said you tap when you become more connected to your character, more of yourself. I think a lot of people say, let's take Roman Reigns, for example.
Roman Reigns is on this run because he finally got to, quote unquote, be himself. Sooner you realize that, is that the better, JT, or does it take longer for some people? Maybe some people don't ever think, hey, I need to put a little bit of myself in my character.
So the wildest part is like when you learn to become a professional wrestler and you learn all of these things, it's you walk away with this Rolodex of information, mm-hmm. but you really don't know what it means until you get to incorporate it into the real world. And I think once people run across these scenarios where they kind of go out there and they fail, and then they look back and they go, why? It's like, because you ran into this tonight. And one of those things was, we want you to come out in who you are. It has to bleed through. And if you're so worried about being whoever your character is, whatever you think that might be, you're going to forget who you are instead of meshing the two together. I can personally even speak at this last show that we just did at Davenport West. We had the debut of a superstar named Lonzo de Chicano. And I'm a very big supporter of Lonzo, and I'm very excited to see him start wrestling, especially for SCW. And Lonzo loves wrestling. And we got to talking one day, and I said, hey man, do you watch movies and stuff? And he's like, nah, I don't really watch movies. And I was like, what? I was like, TV shows? He's like, not really. I'm like, are you kidding me, man? He's like, why? He's like, I love wrestling. That's what I watch. I go, wrestling is everything. I go, you have to open your spectrum to find what you like across music and movies and TV and art and everything. And once you figure out who you are as a person across a broad spectrum of media and art and everything that people soak into, you can find more of those things and connect with the crowd, because it allows your personal self to grow and then find those different things that you can connect with the crowd. Because JT Energy is not just somebody who grew up liking Big Daddy Cool Diesel and Jeff Hardy and Batista. No, I found Michael Jackson, and I found Motley Crue, and I like the Shawshank Redemption and the Patriot and, you know, Step Brothers. Like, you have to take everything that people soak into this world and then envelop it into how you can generate the energy and performance out. So I think that's where people have to realize that when you go into something like professional wrestling, there's a reason that they call it sports entertainment now. And that's because you're ultimately choosing to watch something just like you would watch anything else, whether it be a play or a movie or a band or, you know, poetry. Like, it's a choice, and you have to envelop the need to fulfill people's emotions, because there's a reason that they're coming out to watch you. And I think the more that everybody in pro wrestling gets that, the better every single show will be because of what we're trying to give the audience.
Great words. Great words by JT Energy. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to the Card Subject to Change podcast with me, the Wizard CZ, the Honorable One Nick Bull, and our guest today, JT Energy, SCW Pro Champion, CEW Heavyweight Champion, and the 3XW Pure Champion. JT, let's talk a little bit about your adventures in SC. If I can talk, let me just reset my brain here. Hold on one second. Yeah. There we go. Talk about, you've got a big event coming up here at the end of the month with CEW. Talk about that for a little bit. Talk about Bridge City Slam, and tell us what that feels like going into that, defending your title.
Bridge City Slam, big event that has defined JT Energy and Central Empire Wrestling. We are on Bridge City Slam 5, and I try to let everybody know that I call myself Mr. Bridge City Slam because I am undefeated at that event. Bridge City Slam 1, I won my first set of CEW tag team titles. Bridge City 2, defeated WWE Hall of Famer Jerry the King Lawler. Bridge City 3 defeated Eric Redbeard and got my victory back from losing on Monday Night Raw. Bridge City 4 defeated former National Wrestling Alliance champion Trevor Murdoch. Bridge City 5, me versus the Buns of Steel, Jay Fowler, in a steel cage match to main event the big event. It's one of those things that every year we build to this giant culmination, and I've set myself up by calling myself Mr. Bridge City Slam. I saw what Shawn Michaels did by calling himself Mr. WrestleMania, and I said, well, what better way to stake my claim and show my confidence in what I'm capable of than continuing to live and be Mr. Bridge City Slam? And me and Jay Fowler are no stranger to one another. We had many a battles, especially in like 2018, 2019. They were deeming it the Battle of the Booties, because at the time, the six-star booty, JT Energy, and the Buns of Steel, Jay Fowler, were locking horns. Now, we are two different performers many years later. Jay Fowler has completely transformed himself, and I'd like to think that I'm a very different version than what I was at that time period. And we both kind of have turned ourselves into these versions of belt collectors. I know he is champion of three different promotions at this point in Iowa, Nebraska, and Illinois. So he is very well traveled, also probably very tired from all the wrestling he's been doing, but he loves the craft of professional wrestling, and I love to see his enthusiasm and support that he continues to push for. So I'm very excited. This is realistically probably the most credible threat that I've had at the Bridge City Slam event so far, because I think a lot of people, when they see someone wrestling a name for a championship, they go, ah, that guy's not going to be around. He's not going to be a champion for two shows, three shows in a row. But I think for someone knowing that we have a guy in Iowa challenging me for a championship, that is a Iowa championship, that there's a very realistic scenario here where JT Energy could lose the championship he's had for over 1,000 days. Currently, I am the Roman Reigns of Central Empire Wrestling, and people are acknowledging me. Yes, exactly. But JT Energy has transformed over time over there from being the absolute most hated heel to someone who is now fighting for the people and the respect of Central Empire Wrestling. So me and Jay Fowler, we go a long way back, and this is going to come to a head on June 3rd at Bridge City Slam. And a cage match, anything can happen. So it's a total different ball game. I've only had a few in my life, but it's, the pain is going to be a different level that night.
That was going to be my next question. Have you been in the cage before?
Only a couple times, all at Central Empire Wrestling events. So I'm very familiar with the cage setup. It's your traditional kind of old school steel cage. Think like Mankind, Undertaker, Hell in a Cell, but without the top. We got a door on there. So as far as I'm concerned, I don't know if we're going to do any pinfall submission in the ring. I personally like cage matches where it's escape to win, going over the top or through the door. I just think it gives you a whole lot more drama to add to the match. So I'm excited to see where we go and what we give to the people that are going to pack that place. I know last year we had close to 700 people on hand for Bridge City Slam. And this year we are bringing in Kurt Angle, Jimmy Hart, Deborah, Cowboy Bob Orton, Earl Hebner. So it's got a big opportunity for a lot of people to come out, get autographs, get pictures, and then hopefully see an amazing event.
Get to meet Kurt Angle and then get to see JT Energy do the ape or the strap thing with his gear.
Straps might come down that night for Kurt. You never know.
The Buns of Steel, the steel cage. I mean, you've got your work cut out for you in the main event. That's for sure.
And I know Fowler's really going to be bringing it to another level that night, because his favorite wrestler of all time is Kurt Angle. So I know he's going to want to showcase for Kurt. And really,
for sure.
I'm going to have to watch maybe some Eddie versus Kurt from WrestleMania and see all those different counters I can get in there.
Oh, yeah. Christmas. That's a classic in and of itself right there.
if you're watching, if you're watching some Eddie versus Kurt and you're the Eddie in the scenario, then you got to do a couple of the.
Hey, I'm not too bad at dancing. I think we can. Oh, I think I can throw it out there. I don't do frog splashes, but you never know. There's a first time for everything.
Well, for sure. Hey, for sure. There is a first time for everything. There are other ways. True. And there's a first time for everything. And this is a first here. We've had JT Energy on before, but we brought him back this time, CZ. And I don't think we've ever reviewed one of these episodes.
We definitely have not. That's right. JT gave us a little bit of homework. For those of you who, if you're watching, if you're listening, what I want you to do, if you haven't watched the show yet, go ahead and pause our show. Take 45 minutes, watch Superstars. It's season 11, episode 18. Don't forget when you're done, though, come back and unpause our show because we want you to finish out with us. I'm not telling you to go away from Card Subject to Change. I'm telling you if you want to follow along, that's what you need to do so you can know what we're talking about. This was on what you had sent me, JT, it said May 5th. But according to Peacock, it also says May 4th. Do you remember the date, the exact date of the show? Because I saw two different dates on here.
If I give her a Google right now, I have a May 4th, 1996 that pops up. But that's just the internet. Don't believe everything you read on the internet.
That's true. So May 4th, 1996, episode of WWF Superstars. Such a fun show. It doesn't take a lot of your time. You're not going to be sitting through a three-hour Monday Night Raw like we do nowadays. Not that that's a bad thing, especially in the Triple H era. But show starts off with Gorilla Monsoon talking to, now I believe in this time era, it was Doc Hendricks, correct? It was not Michael P.S. Hayes as he should be. Go ahead, Nick.
Hold on a second. Before we kick it off, we had the Undertaker WWF theme intro. For over 50 years, the revolutionary force in sports entertainment. That gave me goosebumps. Like, oh, I missed this. I forgot about this.
Yeah.
Great memories right there.
That's the stuff when you start to watch these old WWF shows, you realize how much fun production and different things that they tried throughout certain time periods, especially this time period, because now we have the then, now, forever, together. But this was, like you said, the revolutionary force in sports entertainment. And then you, like you said, I love this opening segment. And a lot of the production that they put into this show is awesome. I wish when I tuned into a show like a Monday Night Raw or a SmackDown, a lot of this stuff they still did. Like, why not? Give me a recap. If I missed a week, help me. Like, it doesn't take that long, and they do a really good job because they only hit the high notes here. And when this show started, I instantly knew what the big story was because they told me. And I love that about any episode from this time period. They're so good about telling me what I need to know.
Well, I think the comparison jump right in there
to the.
Sorry about that.
Go ahead, CZ.
I think the comparison fine, there is more. There are so many big stories now that it's kind of harder to do that recap. But I get what you're saying. I would love to see more of that. Give us just a highlight of the big stories that are going on, but I think it's a lot harder nowadays because you could actually consider everything to be a big story with few exceptions with what's going on nowadays.
Yeah.
And obviously, if you were to recap Monday Night Raw, the big highlight tomorrow night would be the first and second round of the World Heavyweight Championship Tournament.
Sure.
But there's so much going on. There's so many wheels spinning at the same time. It'd be harder to do that nowadays.
First night last week on Raw happened on SmackDown. You would think,
I just love that it jumps right in. Like you said, you know what we're going to be focusing on. And how many times you get to hear Diana Smith go, I know you want me, Sean.
So we opened,
every time I got to hear that, yes, like four or five times in the show.
It was great. We opened right away. And the first thing that WWF Superstars tells you is, oh my God, after the pay-per-view, here's the big thing that happened on Monday Night Raw. We had Shawn Michaels confronted in the ring by the British Bulldog and his wife, Diana, and Jim Cornette right over his shoulder. And I have a note in the show because later we get the full segment, but Diana's delivery of that line is so good because she's as boring as plain white bread when she says it. And it just comes across, especially when she's wearing that pantsuit out there. Like, it's so good because then Sean goes, I know who wears the pants in the Smith family. And then you see Bulldog's eyes go out of his head and then they start crawling. So right away, it's so fun to see the big scandal in WWF. Shawn Michaels, the boy toy, the one that all the ladies want, is now going after the wrestlers' wives. And, oh, man, of course you go with Diana and the tie-ins and all this fun stuff. So right away, I love the opening part that they tell me what happened on Raw, the big craziness. And my favorite part from the very opening segment is the British Bulldog calls Sean a dirty, rotten pervert. And the way that he delivers it, and it's so atrocious to Vince McMahon, a pervert, Shawn Michaels. And then you get people who chime in from Raw, like The King, and calling himself scandalous and a womanizer. And, oh, don't get me started on what Jim Cornette says later in his deliver of that promo. Oh, my gosh. Unbelievable.
Cornette is a master. And I will get to him in a little bit. I agree. I can't wait to talk about that.
Did you hear the opening song sung by Doc Hendricks?
I was just about to comment on that. That is probably my favorite part of the beginning here, is you've got the opening song that introduces everybody in their own quirky little way. It's silly shit. I'll be honest with you. It's silly shit, but back in the day, you don't think it is. You look at it now, and it brings a big old smile to your face because, you know, it makes you remember back in this era what wrestling was like, what production was like for other shows, for shows in general.
Yeah.
I love it. Doc singing everybody's name and the short little video of them being on the screen and their description. Yeah. It's brilliant.
Can you rattle off anything? Can you get the tune or rattle off anything?
It's like Shawn Michaels, boy toy, Undertaker, dead man, Yokozuna, Bret Hart, like. They got like all little quirky things, yes, but it's a fun little dun-dun-dun. It's Superstars.
Yes.
It's almost the Billy Joel, We Didn't Start the Fire.
Yeah, yeah.
Big Daddy's Cool, Razor Ramon, Yokozuna, Bret Hart. You nailed it better than I did, but I was like, you talk about that jingle. The creepiest part is Goldust going, are you ready to go? That is the creepiest part of that. And it is a tight of his face. And
yeah. We're peak gold dusting right now.
Nick, I'm creeped out just watching your face doing it.
It creeped me out when I saw it. But I'm gonna tell you, like, I hadn't seen that. I completely forgot about that open in that jingle. Like,
yeah,
I did
trip down memory lane courtesy of JT Energy. Thank you very much. Like, it had been eons since I had seen that. I completely had forgotten about it. So, very grateful that you picked this.
Hopefully, this first match tripped your trigger right away when you realize we have the announcing team of Vince McMahon, Mr. Perfect, and Jim Ross calling the action as we get our first match of the New Rockers, Leaf Cassidy, aka Al Snow, and Marty Jannetty, pulling plush little pigs to the ring
yes,
to face the tag team of the Godwins with Hillbilly Jim.
And not only that, they take one of the plush little pigs, they set it up, one of them holds it down, and it punts it into the audience just to spit in the face of the Godwins.
And Jim Ross has his announcer hat on, and that's not even a real pigskin.
The wildest thing is they start this show right away. Here come the new Rockers. They stop them halfway down the aisle and have a mini interview for 10 seconds with them right there. And I was like, and so many times throughout this entire show, you realize how many all of a sudden out of nowhere interviews we get. And it doesn't even like make sense half the time, but it's just because they need them to say something to convey the story that they're getting ready to tell for the people that are watching at home. So right away, here come the Rockers. They're pulling the pigs. That's weird. Oh, let's get an interview. Let's see why they're doing it. Here's why they're doing it. And now here come the Godwins. And I'm like, that's how you tell a story. There's no build up to this match, but now we just have a fun thing and we have a mini promo right away. And boom, here we go. We got a match.
Right.
So let me just go on record here and bring things into modern times. Tony Khan, if you're watching the show or listening, learn from this. This is how you put a match together and give it meaning instead of just throwing spaghetti at the wall and hoping it sticks.
Yeah, like it's so fun just to see them come out here. And at this time, if you watch the crowd when the Godwins come out, the Godwins are over. Everybody loves the Godwins. And especially as this match progresses, you can really see how much they love them. My notes here are, I wonder who caught that pig, because there's somebody that caught that pig and they're sitting at home and they've been sitting on it hopefully all these years being like, oh, dude, man, I caught that pig.
That is.
It's really fun. Somebody in Iowa's got that little pig. I like the backstage segment of the Body Donnas watching the match being interviewed as the match is going on, because, again, we're telling stories here and we're letting them know that here's our tag team champions, the Body Donnas. They're watching two teams vying to become like the number one contenders for the championship. And you have them being interviewed. Sunny is here being the quirky little snotty thing that she is. You get Skip and Zip getting their two cents in there. I love it. It's so simple. And I don't, this is why like my wrestling brain sometimes doesn't understand what happens, because like if I have point A and point B, it should lead to point C. And sometimes it's not that simple, and it blows my mind, because this is what wrestling is. It's, I'm going to fight you because that's the champions and we want to fight them. Makes sense, right? Let's try to win.
And it works, you mentioned, here, right? I mean, it works when they go backstage. Sunny adds to the match a little commentary, shows the guys watching. How much did it take you back to show that monitor that they're watching it on? That monitor looked like the monitor that the teacher wheeled into the room on movie day.
That's the
first thing I thought of. But I love how they're sitting there watching this old monitor, and it takes you back to 1996. And you're right, this is so simple. It's just a little 30-second clip here. This is why we're doing this. This is, and we're watching and everything. I had a line here, and Jim Ross, God bless him, he's probably the greatest of all time, but he's throwing out, he's spitting some facts here that I don't think he knows what he's talking about. The new Rockers have been listening to Tommy James and the Shondells all week. You're getting ready for this.
Oh, man.
That is just so far over people's heads, but it was great. And I loved how Jim Ross is just so assertive here, but he doesn't ruin anything. He just stays the same old Jim Ross, despite the comedy that's going on. He's going to be serious and treat this like a real match. And that's what I've always loved about Jim, old JR.
Yes. And we get, I like the fun of this match, because we have a pretty straightforward match. I like that the Rockers, they're like a little heelish, but they're not too over the top. You got Hillbilly Jim out there just hoorahing the whole time. I love watching the Godwins work, because they're just big, nasty, punch you, look dirty fighters. And the Rockers are trying to do some pretty fun stuff. But at the end here, when the Body Donnas come out, and we get Sunny to come out as well, it's the distraction. And that way the Rockers don't have to be the big heels. You get the people coming from the back, and it's like, uh-oh, I'm not sure what's going on here. But then we, of course, we get the distraction And we do a little bit of twin magic here at the end, where Al Snow or Leaf Cassidy goes to the top, and because they look so much alike, he hits this top rope sunset flip for the 1-2-3, and then out of nowhere, the Rockers win. And then they point out on commentary, like, the illegal man got the pin. And I'm like, what a weird thing to do. But I guess if you throw your hair in front of your face and there's all this commotion going on, the referee just counts the 1-2-3, and there we go.
It did get a little crazy there as both members of the Body Donnas were interfering, one purposely in front of the ref to cause the diversion behind the ref's back. So you're right. There was a way to get confused there. Everybody kind of got confused, but right away, Jim Ross was like, they pinned the wrong man. And you go back and you're like, yeah, they did pin the wrong man, but zoop, they got right out of it because they had to get to the Doc Hendricks slam jam.
The slam jam next, baby.
I don't know where to start with this. This is I'm gonna be safe here. I'm gonna be safe, but it just has all these weird offsetting feelings as we ascend into the slam jam. I want that velvet portrait of Doc Hendricks.
Oh man. Yes. The idea of like a backstage reporter and then around them, like they have their own portrait of the finger to the chin. And then like all around them is the current like top merchandise as well, which I really liked. Yes, and I think like, I can't imagine if I'm a kid watching Monday Night Raw and someone in the back and there's just different merchandise hanging up and I see it and I'm like, oh my God, I didn't know that was out. I have to get on WWE.com and order that. Like that was the feeling. You saw these things on TV, but we had to order them from Shop Zone magazine. And we're like, oh, I hope the new Undertaker jacket comes in the Shop Zone so I can order it or whatever. And the way that they put the promotional products in here as Doc Hendrick tells you about the upcoming segments and what we just saw and all that. Like, I really enjoyed the slam jam here led to us by Doc Hendricks in all of his glory.
What I took away from the slam jam, what I took away watching, my first impression is that is very much a Doc Hendricks thing to do, to have that velvet poster behind him.
Yeah.
That just screams Michael P.S. Hayes all over, whether he's Doc Hendricks or Michael P.S. Hayes. That brought a smile to my face. I'm like, yep, that is exactly what he needs to be right there.
Yep.
Doc welcomes us in. Of course, this is what he's here for. We're promoting the next pay-per-view, which at that point was In Your House, Beware of Dog, running down the card. And the first thing that really trips my trigger on this card, and I'm going to go back and watch Beware of Dog after, is Goldust versus The Undertaker for the IC belt.
Yeah.
Wait. You got to say his name right. It's Goldust.
It's Goldust against The Undertaker, and they flash that graphic up, and you're like, I forgot this happened. And The Undertaker never won the Intercontinental title. I mean, that's just something you don't think about.
And if you go back and you watch that match gets nuts because during this time period, and like, so you talk about that match and we get this promo that they bring up from Goldust. And these types of promos this is gold. Like, stand in front of a thing. Goldust probably did this promo 20 times. And they figured out which one they liked. But it's him in peak Goldust with the wig and everything, dropping a minimum 100 subliminal messages about about things we shouldn't talk about.
Well, I'll open with a movie quote.
Yeah.
Which he did. And you're right. A million subliminal messages. Among them, that's right, dead man. I'm coming, among the many subliminal messages that Goldust threw in that. But it's effective. You're right. It's prime Goldust, the long wig, the long robe, the feathers, the boa, IC belt. I mean,
if you had never seen Goldust and we only showed you that promo, you instantly know who Goldust is. It's perfect because it's the character. It's his purpose. and I could watch that match. And if I watched him wrestle, I would be like, that makes sense how he wrestles, because based on how I heard him talk, they correlate. They work together.
Nick,
you mentioned the belt.
Oh, yeah, go ahead, CZ.
I want to ask you, you are the belt connoisseur. What do you think of the gold strap behind the belt? Did you catch that? I did.
I loved it. Oh, of course, it had to be with gold dust. I absolutely loved it. I mean, when you talked about this as prime gold dust, JT, and you talk about that belt and stuff, I get kind of sad looking at this promo, because just think of the WrestleMania match we could have had with like Undertaker gold dust, like a prime Undertaker gold dust feud for a WrestleMania with all that build up and lead up. I just wish this would have been like got more run as a feud between these two. Both these guys can work. They both can, you know, gold dust is great on the mic. Undertaker doesn't have to talk that much, you know, and he's going to be effective. I wish these guys would have had a bigger feud, a more higher profile feud.
Yep. Well, Goldust turned out to be the vehicle that the Undertaker needed to use to get to what we were really getting, which is set up by the vignette that comes next, which is our slow but sure introduction of one of our favorite new characters, who is a crazy character in Mankind.
Yes.
And that's what we get here. You get Undertaker versus Goldust, but realistically, and they talk about it a lot on commentary, especially Jim Ross, he goes, I really want to see Mankind versus The Undertaker. And they're putting those things into your brain because they want to let you know, like, that's where we're going. We're going to tell you we want to see it because we want you to get excited as well.
And they're right, because just over 2 years later, we have one of the most iconic, you know, images in wrestling with Undertaker throwing Mankind off the top of the cage at King of the Ring. So, I mean, they were kind of putting it out there. And Goldust Undertaker magic, but obviously you can't refute the magic that Mankind, Mick Foley, whatever you want to say, had with Undertaker in the ring. There was just some undeniability.
Let's take a minute to talk about
Mankind.
Oh, sorry, Nick.
Oh, you go ahead.
That's exactly what I. Let's take a minute to talk about Mankind himself in the early days. I absolutely love that he comes out to the deranged, the da, 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 da. But then when the match is over, it's night time. They're playing the lullaby music for him.
Yep, that's a great definition of a broader spectrum of his character. They're letting you know that he always seems like he's on edge and he's the deranged one, but at the same time, he like has this like nice side of him, but when he loses his shit, guess what? He's throwing those fingers down your throat. So
he's pulling it, he's pulling his own hair.
Yeah. Oh, and what a commitment to a character, as far as someone like Mick Foley at this time period saying, I have to get across this insane character who wears this weird leather mask, and I also have to like rip my own hair out week after week. And I'm sure at some point he had just 19 different bald spots going on, and his wife is at home being like, I still love you. Thank you so much for providing for our family. I understand like you're insane, but I love you, babe.
And just the fact that Jim Ross has gone on record saying that Vince McMahon only hired Mick Foley to throw it in Jim Ross's face that this is going to fail. And he took that character and made it what it was. Mick Foley is a genius.
Yeah.
I can't give enough props to him for what he did to, one, turn that character into a main eventer, and two, throw it in Vince McMahon's face to say, hey, I'm awesome.
Yeah.
I'm freaking awesome.
And let's also throw into that, CZ, how many times had Mick Foley been down this road and told no? And here he is with this character that's, for all intents and purposes, ugly. He's wearing this ugly brown ring gear. Yep. He's wearing a mask. He's got a deranged ear, his hair. But lo and behold, 2 years later, he's the biggest star in wrestling and you know, one of the most iconic moments in Raw history. But think about that for how far into his wrestling journey, how far into the wrestling journey was Mick Foley here? and here he gets Mankind.
Yeah.
And okay, make it work. I mean, it. Yeah. I think it goes to show how great he really was. I mean, with not just the Mankind, but taking the other characters and being with it. And I think I always look at Mankind, Mick Foley as Kurt Angle and Kurt Angle in the same light. Like nobody really, I thought they really took off when they embraced their humor.
Yeah. And I think that's
no
I
humor with Mankind.
You're right on the money. It has who you are as a person has to have layers and it has to have depth. And once you show that, then people are so much more open to reciprocating good or bad to you because they relate to you more as a person because you've shown so many emotions.
And, you know, you get saddled with – if you get saddled with, for all intents and purposes, a shitty gimmick, it's on you to make that work. And, you know, you see so many people who get, for lack of better terms, pushed through the machine and spit out on the other end. That's because they didn't, you know, they took their character and they're like, this is garbage. I'm not going to put any effort into it. Whereas someone like Mick Foley said, okay, I'm going to make the best of this.
Yeah.
And I'm going to show all you bastards what I am.
And any time on any show, any whatever, if I see any type of gimmick or character, I will always give it a chance all the time because everything will work with time. As long as it evolves with the person. So anytime something shows up on Raw or SmackDown or AEW and the internet's like, oh my God, it's so much garbage. I'm like, it's only garbage because you're not giving it the opportunity. It can Correct. Be gold, but you just don't want to. The more that we as fans want to help something succeed, the more it will succeed. But if you see it and you just want to crap on it right away, well, then it's going to get crapped on and it's harder to get over. But something like the New Day showed everybody, hey, how about you shove it up your, you know what? But stuff like this right here, let's talk about Mankind. He comes down to the ring. We got this crazy guy ripping his hair out. But you know who his opponent is here? Scott Taylor, a.k.a. Scotty Too Hottie, before he was Too Hottie.
And he was wearing the Rick Steiner singlet.
Dude, yeah, he was. Absolutely. So we had a really good fun little match here with Scott Taylor and Mankind. One of the things I have down here as a note is JR keeps talking about how Mankind's offense is to the head and to the brain and the face because that's how he sets up the mandible claw. And I thought that was so crazy for him to say, but that's what you do. You have to put over someone's finishing move by telling them why the offense is directed towards certain parts of the body. And JR tried to get over the mandible claw was why Mick Foley beat his face and everything so much.
You're totally on point there, JT, when you talk about Jim Ross's commentary going along with the offense of Mankind and describing him as a whole, as a character. This match got a little cringy when they bring in Bob Sparkplug Holly from the back. And
who has
Bob
hair.
Who has hair, yep. He breaks down the mandible claw for us. Hey, Bob, take that away. What's that mandible claw like? Well, it's like running Talladega at 200.
Hey, Bob was committing to the gimmick.
He was.
Bob Sparkplug Holly, the mandible claw expert of the WWE. Tell us about it.
We're laughing about it here, but that was a shitty gimmick. He was doing the best he could with it. I died laughing at the running 200 at Talladega hitting the wall. You're probably going to that's not a good sign.
I definitely think that they wrote a couple lines for him there, and he was trying to memorize those so hard because he stammered a little bit through that. But I love the idea that what we had happen is we have Mankind beating the hell out of Scott Taylor. We bring in someone who's already been beat up by Mankind to tell about his devastating mandible claw. And then he also tells us who's going to be the one to take out Mankind and set up a match for next week by saying, and he's going to have to face the man who's going to stop Mankind in Fatu. So I appreciate that put over the guy who clearly is going to win with the devastating move that we've been talking about. Show us the guy's butt kick last time, and then put over the WWF superstar that's going to be the next to fight him. so that way I know who's lost, who's won, and who's next, all in one segment.
And it's simple.
So simple.
There's nothing. Challenging about that. It's just
you would think a sixth grade me knew what wrestling was because the WWF were talking to me like I was a sixth grader, and they did it perfectly. And when you watch this stuff back, I don't understand why we're not talking to people like they're sixth graders, because it's so simple and easy to follow.
Yeah,
but here at the end of the match, I think Scott Taylor hits the ropes, and for some reason, Mankind hits the mandible claw out of nowhere. No setup, but just. And to me, like, it's so wild because nowadays when someone puts on a finishing move, I feel like we get a tap pretty quickly. But here, Scott Taylor goes down. They put over how vicious it is. He's making the weird pig squealing noises. And then we're done. Scott Taylor's passed out. You get the nice piano music. And here we go. The end of match number two on Superstars.
Can we just take a minute to talk about what a transitional period this is for the WWE? Look at the people we've named so far and where they're at now compared to 2 years from now when the Attitude Era hits. Bob Sparkplug Holly, who will eventually evolve into Hardcore Holly, Mankind, Goldust, Scott Taylor, Scotty Too Hottie, Leaf Cassidy, who is going to grab a mannequin head and turn into Al Snow.
Hey, I don't know if you remember, we had the Godwins, who made a brief stint in the Attitude Era as Southern Justice.
I do remember that.
With Jeff Jarrett.
SummerSlam 98.
Yeah, baby. So, yeah, a lot of things do change over when time here.
You love the Godwins. I was going to ask earlier if you enjoyed Southern Justice's work to the Godwins, but... Probably not as big a catalog.
I think the Godwins were pretty peak stuff. And I feel like if we would have had more Godwins in the Attitude Era, I feel like the Godwins could have been, if Henry Godwin hadn't have had his neck broken by Legion of Doom or whatever happened. Like, we had Midian, who kind of came into the ministry, but I bet we would have had Henry Godwin in the ministry in some way, shape, or form if he wouldn't have got hurt as well, with how close he was with The Undertaker.
We're sitting here with JT Energy talking about Superstars from 1996. You talk about those names you mentioned that are part of the Attitude Era. There's a couple names there mentioned that are still relevant today. We mentioned Fatu. We obviously know that Fatu is a part of the Bloodline storyline just by relation. There's also another guy on this card that has been relevant lately that appeared at WWE Backlash, and that's Savio Vega.
Savio Vega
is then challenged in this next segment by Ted DiBiase. After DiBiase and Stone Cold Steve Austin embarrass their chauffeur, DiBiase comes up with a great idea to add, if Vega loses the Caribbean strap match, that he would become DiBiase's chauffeur. So,
yes,
this is 96, and we're talking about Savio Vega. And then, you know, just a week ago, Savio Vega was making an appearance at WWE Backlash. I was laughing as this was going on, you know, like how ironic, right?
Yep. And what a beautiful little backstage segment we get, where we get Million Dollar Man in the limo, of course. Why not? With Stone Cold Steve Austin in a tracksuit right next to him, because he's still the ringmaster, even though he's starting to look like Stone Cold a little bit.
Yep.
And we have this stupid moment where accidentally the limo goes in reverse and they lose their minds. And then what better way to add a stipulation to the match than being like the Million Dollar Man being like, you know what? I got an idea. And if you lose, you'll be the chauffeur. And I'm like, that makes so much sense. Like,
and then
why
went,
not?
And then he went.
You know what Stone Cold did? Nothing. He just remained silent
with his sunglasses on.
You know, Nick and I in our 40s here, these kids that came in during the Attitude Era, if you had told them that 2 years prior to them coming into the business and watching when things were getting hot with the WWE that Stone Cold Steve Austin had a chauffeur, they would have laughed. They're going to laugh in your face.
Yeah.
Right.
I love this, that we get this little segment to set up to talk about a match. And honestly, Austin and Savio when you watch him at this time period, Austin was still very much like stunning Steve Austin from WCW with the way that he worked. Yes. When they put him with somebody like Savio, Savio could really work too. That's why they brought him in and let him work with Scott Hall, because they were such great workers together. And the Caribbean strap match is really good. Him and Austin had some good stuff going on. And we get this segment earlier in the show to talk about the match. And then later in the show, we get another backstage promo with Savio Vega holding that Caribbean strap, cutting an amazing promo, just like Goldust got to cut earlier with the velvet backdrop and the different coloring. Like, what a way to just set up matches and talk about stuff than just traditional wrestler promos and backstage segments. I love it. It's so good. I can't get enough of this episode. The more I go back and talk about it.
JT, let me ask a question. We talk about this production and these vignettes, and you've been to enough Raw and SmackDowns that is a lot of this stuff getting done the day of on those shows. I know on Superstars they used to tape a bunch of these back sure. in the night, but when you're there backstage before Raw or backstage before a SmackDown, any of this production stuff going on that, you know, kind of catches your eye and makes you kind of like, you know, pay more attention to things?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Like, they have the traditional little Raw or SmackDown sets set up in the back where they have the TV and stuff like that.
Sure.
And we still get little vignettes kind of like that every now and then, where someone's watching the TV or they get interviewed backstage. And maybe I don't get to soak this in enough because I don't watch Raw live every Monday. I don't get to see all the in-betweens, but the right. in-betweens mean a lot. And that's what a show like WWF Superstars shows you. It's the catch-up show on the weekend because I missed Monday Night Raw. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of production always going on day of show. So whether it's in the hallways or the backstage or whatever, I mean, it's always a giant moving machine. And we're watching a taped Superstars. If you watch, I think, at least the next two episodes on WWF Superstars, this was all shot in one day. I watched weeks worth of TV in 1996 when I went and saw this show. So when I saw the Godwins come out five times and the Bushwhackers three times and Owen Hart five times, like, I was kind of like, why are so many guys wrestling back and forth? This is real weird. I've never gone to a wrestling show like this. And my first one, I didn't expect it to see the same guys multiple times. But
right,
it made so much sense when I watched and realized what was happening, or when you bought the program that week or at that show, they kind of give you the Iggy, like, hey, you're being part of the WWF Superstars taping. It'll air on this date and watch it and whatever. So, but now we get the Raw recap with, with the match, or not the match, the segment of Shawn Michaels being confronted by Diana and the British Bulldog and Jim yes. Cornette with our awesome announcer in the ring, Vincent Kennedy McMahon. And my first note here is Jim Cornette is so hateable by being a human that exists on this earth.
I could not agree more. Jim Cornette is brilliant at getting heat. It's just natural for him. He's so charismatic, but in that bad way, like, you just want to despise him. Everything he does.
At one point, Shawn Michaels looks away and he goes, hey, pal, look at me. I'll sue you. And I was like, Jesus, like, chill out, Jim. But we're explaining the allegations here of Shawn Michaels mm-hmm. advancing himself onto Diana Smith. We talked earlier about the white bread version that Diana delivers the line of, Shawn, I know you want me. And Shawn Michaels giving his retort of, Diana, don't flatter yourself. And we get this awesome thing. Diana gives it a moment to breathe, which I'm sure she was kind of coached through at this point. And then she slaps Shawn Michaels. And that really sets things off in this segment. But it's so simple. It's so easy. I did like how they set up here. They have Jim Cornette show a clip from the mm-hmm. previous night. They have this little bitty circle shown on that during a match. And they go, you can see here, Diana is brought to the back by someone. And she was told it was, I don't know, Davey Boy Smith or whatever. And of course, she's brought back and Shawn Michaels is there. And he pushed Diana into a dark corner and propositioned her and forced himself on her. And I was like, oh my God, like what a dumb story, but also like what a great story. Because this happens the night after a pay-per-view. We're setting up the very next pay-per-view with who's going to challenge Shawn Michaels for the championship. We get the moment where Shawn says the line of, we know who wears the pants in the Smith family. Bulldog attacks him. We get this big brawl in the ring. And this is how we set up Beware of Dog. And this is how simple wrestling used to be. We have a pay-per-view. Someone loses, the champion retains. The very next night, we have a reason on what's going on, and then from there, that's how we do wrestling. Who's going to face the champion next? And that's how we figure it out the very next night. In this story, to set up the next challenger, awesome. Get something in here to make me be able to sink my teeth into. And with the Diane Hart Smith and Jim Cornette and the British Bulldog, it gave us something very different after he had just had a knockdown dragout fight with Big Daddy Cool Diesel the night before.
No, for sure. And my notes here focus on Cornette and his rant at Shawn Michaels. So many words that he throws out, but the one that stands out to me, you're a fornicator. That just floored me.
I think the one that stuck with me when I listened to it back, and he said, you wish that you could deflower Diana.
Yes.
And I was like, oh my God. Like, like you could feel like the cringe in the room when he was saying that stuff.
Oh man. Yeah. Jim Cornette. If you are newer to wrestling, if you're one of our younger listeners, go back and study Jim Cornette. He's one of the greats as far as managers, as far as vocalization, the things that he says, things that he does. It's brilliant. He's not quite Bobby Heenan level. That is always going to be my top guy as far as someone on the mic.
Yeah,
but he's up there.
Yeah,
I love it. And
on commentary here, you have King also like chiming in here and there. So it feels like you have Cornette and Jerry the King Lawler are both kind of like pushing it, Shawn being the bad guy and how, you know, the fans shouldn't be rooting for this fornicator and this womanizer and whatever. So it got the point across. It was really good. I love the segment. So simple, so easy. And that was our big moment from Raw to get us talking about Beware of Dog, which we talk about this whole episode here on WWF Superstars.
For sure. And I know it's just you and me now, JT. Nick lost power. He's working on getting his way back in. But,
oh, my God. They took the internet and his power?
Yeah. Oh, I guess he didn't have enough quarters to throw into the
– we better start a Patreon for Nick. We got to get people helping him out.
A GoFundMe for him? Absolutely. For sure.
But our next match, we get going here. We get the recap, and now we have one of my favorites. We get the Bushwhackers versus the Body Donnas in a tag team matchup on WWF Superstars. Both great versions. This is the later version of the Bushwhackers.
Yeah.
But it's so fun because they have this big, dumb kangaroo mascot, which I felt like I'd never seen in my life until I went to that show, and I was like, the Bushwhackers have a kangaroo mascot now, and he's wearing like big dumb white Nikes. He's a kangaroo through and through, but he's got big dumb clunky shoes on. And they come to the ring. They're a little bit more Outback Jack Australia'd up when they come out, but the fans love it. Everybody's doing the Bushwhacker dance and the Bushwhacker walk. Exactly. Yeah. And then here we go. We get the Body Donnas coming out. Tag team champions. We get Sonny coming out. The production was weird here because Sonny gets in the ring. She cuts a bad promo. It's very quick. It seems like she's not giving the crowd time to listen to her. And then they cut to like a commercial break or whatever. But it was like one of those things where I understand why they did it, but at the time period, I was like, that was one of the only things that like really didn't hit because it didn't feel like she knew how to deliver the speed of that promo. It felt like, right. Hey, get to the ring, hey, say this really quick. Hey, we have to cut to a commercial break based on our production that we're shooting this show on. So once this starts up, though, we get some pretty fun stuff. It's not a tag team wrestling clinic, people. This time period is not clinic wrestling in any way, shape, or form, but it's fun. It's good.
It is.
Chris Candido, who is Skip from the Body Donnas, he is a phenomenal person for a bad guy to watch on, like, how to bump, how to sell for people. This guy is making the Bushwhackers look like $1 million by all the stuff that he's doing. We've got Zip here, Dr. Tom Pritchard, who has shaved his head, dyed it blonde, is now part of the tag team champions. We've got two amazing workers here working with what you could say is not a great gimmick, but they are making it work. And they're a great tag team that's very easy to hate.
And how many times have we said that tonight, where it's not the greatest gimmick in the world, but the person who's in it is making it work?
Absolutely. And the fans, I mean, think about it. We have the New Rockers and we have the Body Donnas. Two dumb tag teams out there, but the teams that they're facing, the Godwins and the Bushwhackers, the crowd is over the moon when they come out. They love them because they're just fun. And that's the great part about it. You have these fun teams that people really want to get behind because of who they are and what they are.
I mean, the Bushwhackers are licking each other for crying out loud when they come out to the ring. How much fun is that? I mean,
it's great.
And would you, in your wildest dreams, would you have ever walked out with Jossie when you were in Vicious and Delicious and licked his face? I mean, come on.
We did some wild stuff, but I don't think we did any face licking. So
I don't remember that either, but how crazy, because, and that's just over with the people in this era.
Yeah. Yeah. It's fun. And the little segment we got here in the middle of the match, we get a cutaway to the crowd. And I can remember being a fan of this crowd being like, what's going on? We get Harvey Whippleman out here, who is actually scouting, or he is criticizing. He's taking notes of all the WWF officials because he is going to write a full report on why the officials are so biased and not doing their job and turn into President Gorilla Monsoon here. This is the only thing when I watch back, I'm like, I don't remember where this story about referees not doing their job came in, but Harvey Whippleman's here to make sure that we know that he's the one guy, and him being a former referee, which I wish that they would like a little put more here into the story so that way we understood it. But yes, we get Harvey Whippleman out here in the crowd. He's talking about the referees and how bad a job the referee is actually doing. And then when you watch the match, the referee's not doing a bad job at all. It's very wild. Nick, you're back. What do you got to say, baby?
I totally agree with you. The Harvey Whippleman thing should have come on right after the Rockers Godwins match at the beginning of the show. You're absolutely right.
We could have got two Harvey segments in here.
Right.
Show me it twice. Why not?
Like a recurring thing, right? They should have said, hey, disgruntled official Harvey Whippleman here. Harvey, what are you doing? Well, I'm here taking the notes of the guys that still have jobs, but they shouldn't have jobs, you know? That would have been a lot easier. It was kind of weird. They threw it to Jim Ross at the Harvey Whippleman. It was kind of like a one and done, and that was it. It was just very...
Yeah. I love all these
very
weird
random...
These weird segments that they make JR run around this building and interview people out of nowhere.
Yeah. JR, go over here and talk to this guy.
Yeah. But here's the continuity that I love of this episode, right? So the first match, we get Godwins, Rockers, Body Donnas come out, cost them the match. Oh, boo, boo. I don't like it. But now we get Bushwhackers, Body Donnas. And what happens at the end of this match? Oh, now the Godwins come back out. Uh-oh. And I love Sonny punches, I think, Bushwhacker Butch in the butt. And he turns around and gets mad at her, and he gets hit from behind. But that's what sets off the Godwins to come over here. And we're telling the story that Vinius really likes Sonny because he got an autographed picture from her, and he's in love with the city girl. And Henry Godwins wants to throw the slop on her, and he stops him from slopping her, which kids, please watch the next couple episodes of Superstars, because boy howdy, when we get the payoff where Sunny gets the slop dumped on her, ooh baby, one of the best moments in my childhood.
That's Arkansas goulash.
Oh my god, actually I have a note here. I'm almost positive the slop is just leftover catering. It looks like it's like pasta salad.
Yeah, it does.
I laughed real hard. But Vinius grabs the bucket. He goes up. He hits Skip before they do the rocket launcher. Bushwhackers win. They get the non-title win over the Body Donnas. Sonny's crying. We get the big pop. And if you, when Phineas hits him with the bucket and you watch the crowd explodes. The crowd is so hot for this moment when the Body Donnas lose. And like I said, it's not an amazing wrestling match, but it's the finish. That's what we remember. That's what we're clamoring for, is that moment when the bad guys lose, and they lost, and it was so great. And I know the referee saw what was going on, because he turns around and Vinius is still up, and it don't matter. Everybody's having fun. Actually, yep. Maybe that's why Harvey Whippleman's so mad, is he knows the referee saw that, and that's a bunch of BS. But it was awesome. I love this finish to this match.
You make a great point there, JT. I think maybe not as, I mean, I can't comment on this obviously as a wrestler, but as a wrestling fan, we put expectations on things way too much. Like, oh, if this match isn't this, well, then I'm not going to like it as much. And
right.
And it's not. I mean, at least for me, I don't sit down and have to have a five-star match to be entertained. I can sit there and watch two guys tell a story. And if there's comedy involved, I love it. You know, just tell me a story and keep the thing moving. I think so oftentimes we're looking for the big move or the big result. But, I mean, wrestling's all about moments. Everybody has their moments and stuff and their favorite moments. And I think so we get so targeted in the tunnel vision on, oh, it's going to be a complete 30-minute match with all these false finishes and a five-star match. And then – no, we can get simple enjoyment out of a 43-minute episode of Superstars, a 5-minute tag team segment match where there's not really a lot of mat wrestling going on, but man, there's a lot of storytelling going on.
Yeah, yep. This episode is nothing but stories, and I love it. And I get the high moment out of this. Mm-hmm. We get the next little segment here, and we get set up for Slammy Award winner Owen Hart facing Duke the Dumpster Drosy, baby. This is 1995 wrestling right here. We get Duke the Dumpster Drosy, who must have just cut his hair, because they still show him long hair in the graphics, buzzed head when he comes out, like carrying that trash can with him. They get the introductions here. I love me some Owen Hart. I'm always so excited to remember that I got to see Owen Hart wrestle in these moments, so especially this type of Owen Hart. But before we get to the match, we cut away, and what do we get to see? A little infomercial for the Warrior Academy. Warrior University, baby, where you too can live your dream with the help of the Ultimate Warrior.
With a strong regimen and the backing of the WWF.
Hey, oh, I got Warrior U or Chase U. Who do you have?
Probably Chase U, because they have something in their brain. I guarantee I watched that as a kid, and I was like, I would love to be a professional wrestler, but this scares me to death. Warrior with no makeup telling me that he's going to be my trainer to learn to be a wrestler. I don't know who went to Warrior University, but I've never heard of anyone that went to Warrior University to become our next WWE or F champion. So I assume Warrior coming back to the WWF at this time period, Warrior University had to have been something that he worked into his deal, where he was going to have a school, he was going to have commercials that aired, and he was gonna be the one that found the next WWF superstar so he could put his name and his legacy to keep going within the company.
Sure.
Absolutely. And what a fun little set. The fact that Warrior doesn't have paint on I'm looking at this. I'm like, that's not the Ultimate Warrior. Where's your face paint? I wouldn't go to Warrior University based on the fact that he wasn't wearing his paint.
Hey, yeah. And I mean,
I don't believe that's who he is.
We get some really weird stuff from the Ultimate Warrior during this time period. At one point he goes into a feud with Goldust, and I specifically remember him coming out on Monday Night Raw, no paint on his face, full warrior getup, but he's got his hair back in a ponytail with a hat on and sunglasses, but nothing else on his face. And it's like, man, he did not know how to figure out how to get Jim Hellwig into the Ultimate Warrior and make it work. It had to be Ultimate Warrior or nothing.
Right.
If I remember history correct, that moment when he came out with the hat and sunglasses was when Jerry Lawler smashed him with the picture.
Yes.
And he didn't want to get cut on his head. That's why he had the hat on.
Of course. You got to pay him extra, brother.
After the Warrior University, I had a mention on here. I loved how Owen always put the sharpshooter on. He always seemed, he invented it, not Brett, of course. I loved how he sunk it in, sat back, and pulled. I thought maybe at points he did it better than Brett, just because I just love the whole Owen, claiming that he made it up. But
we had a pretty fun little match here between Duke and Owen. And I think that's the fun part about it. Like, when I went into this match, I was like, okay, I know Owen's a good wrestler. Mm-hmm. And I assume Owen is going to make whoever he's wrestling kind of step up to his level, but he's also going to make him look really good. So we get the fun stuff here. We get the dumpster. We get Duke grabbing the slammy, throwing it in the trash can.
Yep.
But then we get Jim Cornette pulling out of the trash can, polishing it off with
with
his pocket square the whole match. But then, of course, we get a great, and I get jealous of this because I love this idea and this finish a lot of times. We get the turnbuckle pulled off. Duke runs in, goes for a knee, misses right into the exposed steel, instantly locks in the sharpshooter, 1-2-3, submits. Like, how fun. Just boom, your knees hurt. Here's my submission hold. Match is over. Owen can win clean with the sharpshooter, but it's because he cheated with the exposed steel. I love it. And Duke hit some really fun stuff. He had a really big power slam in this match. Mm-hmm. He did some really cool stuff to show, hey, I'm a good wrestler. I'm not just some cheesy Duke the dumpster guy, but he had fun with us and got his gimmick across. But then he also did some wrestling stuff here. So if you've never seen a Duke the dumpster Drosy match, this is a pretty good match to watch him work in.
I mean, I guess I forgot how tall he was.
No, he's a big guy.
He is a big dude. You see him with the buzz cut here, and it's the first time I think you see him without the long hair that he had his whole time here in WWF. And, I mean, he's a tall dude, and I guess I forgot how big he was. I mean, maybe he looks a little bit bigger, the fact that he didn't have the hair. But for a big guy, he moved pretty well, I thought. And he was around during the tough times of WWF when it was –
cheesy
cartoon character driven, And we're through the woods here. The bad stuff's behind us. And if you're a WWF fan, you're just coming out of the woods and things are starting to lighten up.
Yeah. We get this moment here where Owen sinks in the sharpshooter. Yep. He doesn't let it go. Who runs out? Bob Sparkplug Holly, baby. He's got to be the baby face. And he's going to help his friend out. And when I watched him get in the ring, I think Bob is just so jacked up and ready to be in the ring, because he is beating the hell out of Owen Hart in that moment. And I'm like, oh my God. If I watch people get beat up nowadays in a brawl or a pull apart, usually as a worker, it doesn't feel like it's life or death, and the guy's beating the hell out. I'm like, they're throwing stuff, but it feels like, okay, we're throwing stuff to get the story across. Bob Holly looks like he is beating Owen Hart to death in these moments. When he grabs his head and starts laying him in, I'm like, oh no, Owen. But I'm sure Owen was he got brought up in the Heart Dungeon, and I'm sure he was tough as nails and didn't care and lay it in, brother. But of course, this has to get what we get the we get Davey Boy Smith right out. We're gonna get the British Bulldog to save Owen. And what's this gonna do? Giant pull apart. You know what that's gonna set up? The tag team match for next week. Why?
Yes,
because
sir.
That's a story. The bad guy did something too long. A good guy saved another good guy. The bad guy ran back out, saved his partner. And now Jim Cornette says, you know what? We'll fight him next week. And then after the match, or to actually to close this episode of Superstars, we get the thoughts of Duke the Dumpster Drosy and Bob Holly on why they're going to be a great tag team that's going to kick the butt of Owen Hart and British Bulldog next week. And then Superstars goes off the air. Hey, tune in next week because we set up a tag team match. Whoa.
Yep.
Superstars goes off the air, and I'm like, why didn't JT request the next episode? Because I want to watch it and see. Now, listen. Do you know who appears on the next episode? This was a blast from the past.
Oh, I'm going to throw out a name. You tell me if it's who it is. Does it happen to be Techno Team 2000?
Yes. Yes. I had completely forgot. So I'm glad you mentioned that when you were at this show, they tape about five episodes. I think that needs to be explained. Like, people don't maybe understand back in the day, that's what they did. It took me behind the curtain. The first time I went to a wrestling show, I was 14, and I think they did five TV tapings that night, and it's like, this is how they do it. Okay. Yeah. It's cool. You get to, I saw Bret Hart wrestle three matches, Big Daddy Cool. And if you're a fan of wrestling, what better way to sit there for 5 hours and to see how they do things behind the scenes,
Do things for TV. What better way to be a professional wrestler than wrestle multiple times in one night
in front of the same crowd,
figure out what works, what doesn't, and get better as the night goes on. Especially if you're telling a story like Owen Hart just wrestles out there. Then they set up a tag match. Owen and Duke now know what works and what doesn't. And then when they go out next time, hey man, let's do this because the crowd didn't bite into this. Awesome. Yeah. Let's make sure that's how we end the tag match, because the continuity, I can tell the story in the same night because I know what happened last week on TV because we only did it an hour ago. And to pull a little bit back here for people to ever go and they watch AEW, if you go ever watch AEW Dynamite at the end of the night, they're also going to tape AEW Rampage. So you're going to walk away knowing what happened on the Wednesday show and the Friday show. And AEW is somewhat smart enough to go ahead and tie these things together. But that's the thing. That's kind of the fun part, is watching stuff that's taped and seeing what works, what doesn't, how they tie stuff together, and seeing if they really sink themselves into the story here with WWF being a master at it on this Superstars episode. I love it.
I agree.
JT, I know we talked about Bridge City Wrestling, but let's talk about a little bit of SCW here. Just a couple weeks, big show coming up. Are you appearing on that show?
But before we jump into SCW, did you guys do any research on this show? Did you happen to see what dark matches happened?
I did not. I stayed away from any forum or anything on this because I didn't want to look at it. I just wanted to be totally surprised by how I saw it. I did not.
I sat through many, many episodes of WWF Superstars, and I can remember sitting there for so long that night. And they had been advertising matches. One of the matches that I got at the end of the night was The Undertaker versus Mankind. That is the only time The Undertaker appeared on that show. So you waited all night to get that awesome entrance.
Yes.
And I'm pretty sure Undertaker won, or there was a DQ or something. No, here it says The Undertaker defeated Mankind. We also got a dark match of Mark Marrow and Hunter Hearst Helmsley. Wild man, Mark Marrow, I'm sure. And then we got a dark match of The Ultimate Warrior defeating Vader.
Ooh, okay.
And then last but not least, the match that we had been waiting for all night, or at least the one man that we had been waiting for all night. We got the Heartbreak Kid, Shawn Michaels, your WWF champion, defeating Stone Cold Steve Austin to retain the WWF championship that night. That was the go home match for that event, if I'm not mistaken.
Just 2 years later, that thing's headlining a WrestleMania.
Yeah. So
just think, how crazy is that? I mean, it just like that, it can change just like that in the world of wrestling.
Yeah.
That is amazing.
Yeah. You sat through so many matches all night, but the people that were the stars only came out one time.
Mm-hmm.
But now we can talk about SCW. Now that I cleared you in.
I'm glad you gave that. So
yeah, I agree.
I believe SCW has a show coming up a little. Just under 2 weeks
May
away.
May 27th.
Yeah, May 27th. If you're I'm looking at the calendar here as we record Memorial Day weekend.
Correct.
We can say. Will you be at that show, JT?
Absolutely. Your SCW Pro Champion is going to be there. We are going to be outside and we are praying to the Mother Nature gods that they are with us on this day because we are going to be outside in bluegrass, rocking and rolling. I believe it may be the tennis courts setting up. It's going to be bring your own chair, get a front row seat, and get some upfront live SCW Pro action. And when we're outside, that environment, you get to witness all the glory, baby. I assume we're going to be under the bright lights of that tennis court that night. JT Energy does not have a announced match at this point. And I've had these run-ins with the Devil Dog. And I mean, just the other night, I had another run-in with Johnny Wisdom. I haven't heard anything from Connor Braxton. And I just had this insane moment with Dante Leon and Jossie. Everybody, it seems like in some way, shape or form, it is really true. When you're the champion, you got a big bullseye in your back. But as far as I know, and as far as I'm concerned, there's really only been one person lately that's been putting their name in my mouth. And good for him for saying it and speaking up and having the guts or the gusto or the balls, whatever you want to say. Sure. The only person that's been putting their name in my mouth lately is Joesa. Joesa put out a cute little thing not too long ago saying, "Hey, I personally think the SCW Pro Championship picture needs a little bit of new energy in it." But he ran an Instagram live. Someone said, "What are his future plans?" Brought up maybe my name. I don't know if that's a future thing or a what's going to come of it. But that's the only person that's really been putting their name in my mouth lately. So nothing's announced. I'm not sure. SCW sometimes likes to hide things, and you show up the day of the show and then you get some stuff. But if I know SCW, whenever Monday Night Raw is on or SmackDown is on or AEW is on, if you hop on the old Twitter machine, that seems to be the times that SCW Pro is the most active. So if you want to stay tuned to SCW Pro and figure out maybe what the matches are going to be for your upcoming big show on the 27th, keep an eye on the Twitter.
Absolutely. Before we wrap up, JT, where can we find you on social media?
That's at HOGPIG Godwin at. No, I'm just kidding.
I'm sitting here. I'm like, oh, dude, he's pulling our leg.
You can find me at. absolutely. You can find me at DJ Click and Play on all forms of social media. That's pretty much the Facebook. If you go to the World Wide Web, I've actually told people to do this before. I said, go to Google, type in JT Energy, tell me what happens. And usually the first thing that pops up is like pro wrestling tees, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube. So pretty much anything I need you and want you to see, it's all there. So if you're not sure and you can't, for some reason, you can't spell at DJ Click and Play, just go to the Google, type in JT Energy. All the important stuff pops up. I've done the research to make sure that it does. but that's where you can find me. You support me by buying the t-shirts or coming out to the shows. Otherwise, just interact with me on social media because I love it. Because just like this room right here where I'm sitting in, my room that I grew up in where I fell in love with professional wrestling, I'm trying to get fans to fall in love with professional wrestling. So that way someday some kid walks up to me and goes, man, I listened to the Card Subject to Change podcast and listened to you talk about WWF superstars, and I wanted to start my dream.
Beautiful. Well, that is going to wrap things up for us. JT, thank you so much for coming back on the show. Definitely look forward to having you back on in the future. One of our favorite guests for sure. Next week, we're welcoming another SCW Pro member. This time, not a wrestler. We're welcoming Alex McCarthy, the ring announcer, talking about his wrestling journey next week. And then the week after that, we've got Triple Duty with Night of Champions, Battleground, Double or Nothing, Quadruple Duty if you count SCW Pro's show. Thank you all for listening. We will see you next week on Card Subject to Change.